Hey, welcome to another edition of Old School Guns, the podcast that tells you like it is. And we are beholding to no one. We have no sponsors. No one has bothered to tread there. And so we have no sponsors. We have no affiliated network or anything that tells us what to do. So we're completely independent and completely honest. One of the things we'd like to have you do is hit the subscribe button, the like button, the follower button, whatever button on a platform that you can that you're listening to the podcast on, and you should, fingers crossed, get a notification when the next episode posts. So let's get right down to it. I think the first story that needs to be addressed, and it's actually two or three related stories. Last podcast, I basically told you my stance on the NRA, Second Amendment, gun rights, and basically how we're all in the same boat. And the smart thing to do is get behind the NRA and get out there and protect our Second Amendment rights. Understanding that in the past, some mistakes have been made and definitely some judgmental errors. But you know, those things are things that can be solved later. I think that I would much rather work on Second Amendment rights and have my gun rights than quibble about, you know, all this other stuff and lose it because we've taken our eye off the ball. And believe me, the enemies of the Second Amendment, the enemies of your gun rights, they haven't taken their eye off the ball, and they're using this as a wedge to try to fragment the unity that they know that gun owners have when it comes to defending their gun rights. So they're trying to use this as a wedge to break us all up and get us infighting, but it's not going to work with me. It's just not going to work. So I just wanted to start with that and say a couple of stories out there. One of them was the potential home purchase by Wayne LaPierre that was being orchestrated by Ackerman McQueen. You know, that's, to me, that's just not a real big story. The NRA was not going to use any of their money. They said it. It was not going to be NRA money that bought this house, so Wayne LaPierre can go buy the house he wants. I realize that there are spin doctors out there trying to spin this into he was conning the NRA through Ackerman McQueen to buy him a house. It's simply not true. It just simply is not true. Okay, the next thing are hairstylists and I guess wardrobe stylists for Mrs. LaPierre, who does have a role in some of the women's groups and some of the other political initiatives that the NRA has. And to that, there was a guy, he's on Fox News, he has a show once a week, his name is Steve Hinton, has a British accent. I don't know if he's a naturalized U.S. citizen, I assume he is. But anyway, he went all into that and called LaPierre and by extension and association his wife basically grifters and chiselers and getting rich off the NRA and all the rest of this. And you know, it was ridiculous. The guy's obviously either a complete fool or a liar because, you know, the fact of the matter is before he goes on stage, he has a hair and wardrobe stylists look him over. He's got those kind of people too. You know, when you put people out in front of media, you have to do that or else you wind up with somebody who does not present or appear well on camera. So, you know, this is all understandable. All the people on Fox News, they have a whole makeup and wardrobe department for these people. And so for them to sit around and cast stones is ridiculous. Again, this goes back to if you operate in the swamp, you have to operate a certain way. If you're going to present yourself on television, you have to present as professional of an appearance as we've come to expect from television programming and the people who appear on it. You have to be as well groomed and as well dressed and as well made up as the people who are interviewing you and other people on the show and people who may do this professionally every day. It doesn't really matter. A lot of the audience is undecided. A portion of it is undecided. And if you come on and you look amateurish, you look scruffy, that's just part of the optics that goes along with it. If you look polished and professional, you're able to convey and make logical points that help explain gun rights and why we believe in them. So we have to play the game. If you're in the swamp, you have to play the game. I've often said it on this cast over and over again, you don't throw Wayne LaPierre on a commercial airliner. You just don't. You do have to fly him around on a private jet. It's security. It's, you know, the ugly incidences and optics that would happen if Wayne LaPierre was assaulted at an airport, if they had, you know, and these libtards will follow you around. They will harass you at every public thing. Sarah Sanders got thrown out of a restaurant because somebody recognized her and didn't like her. Mitch McConnell and some of these other people have had, I think Tucker Carlson, have had people outside their homes beating on pans all night so they can't get any sleep because they don't like something they said on television. Imagine what that kind of mentality, the potential for trouble that is with someone like Wayne LaPierre, who stands up and is a public face for gun rights. Most of us are anonymous. We're not public faces for gun rights, but it just so happens Wayne LaPierre is. And so I would say he's even more of a public face than are the presidents of the NRA. I think that's been proven to be kind of a figurehead post. And when people think of the face of the NRA, they think of Wayne LaPierre. They don't think of Carolyn Meadows and before that Oliver North or anybody else. So, you know, we have to operate in a certain way. That's part of the cost of doing business. And do I think that they should have some sort of oversight committee or some sort of restraint? Yes, I think that's probably a good idea. But that's small ball now. We have got to get after 2020. We have got to make sure that we crush them at the polls because the bad people are out there. And people like Steve Hinton are liars. They're lying to you about the NRA because they're lying to you by not telling you the truth that essentially every organization does this. Don't think for a minute that the ACLU or the Southern Poverty Law Center or any of these other crackpot organizations, especially the gun controllers, you know, who knows, but you know, before they go on television, they get prepped up too for with stylists and makeup. Before they go to a big event, they get taken care of by stylists and wardrobe people. They just do. That's just part of the way the game is played. And I think it's pretty lousy to think that everybody else can play that game, but the NRA just somehow can't. Oh, getting to our next interesting story. The Squad, the radicalized congresswomen who are really a national disgrace. I mean, the thing that's upset the apple cart now is that Tlaib can't get to Tlaib and Omar were told, I guess, they can't go to Israel after talking all kinds of smack and making all kinds of anti-Semitic statements and everything else. It's very, very clear that you know, hey, sometimes there's retaliation, and this is retaliation. They don't have to let you in, so why should they? Tlaib is championing people. She's a champion for them. People who are launching rockets into Israel. Now they're not shooting at military targets. These aren't guided missiles that are going to land on something that's been reconned and they know what it is and it's of military significance. They're shooting rockets over into another country, which is Israel, which. And they don't care if it lands on a preschool, a high school, an old folks home, a hospital, a shopping mall. They don't care. They're just launching it, hoping that it lands and kills somebody. And the genesis of all this is a belief that Israel does not have the right to exist on the ground that it currently occupies. And, you know, that's been the conflict since 1948. And you know what? The bottom line is it's not going to stop until they come to a realization that Israel has a right to exist, it's going to have borders, and it's going to protect itself. They have to accept those three things. Israel has a right to exist, Israel is going to have borders, and Israel is going to protect itself. If you can't believe in those things, and you can't buy off on them, then you're not going to be at peace. That's just it. And, you know, again, she doesn't represent a district from anywhere. She represents an identity politic radicalized point of view. She and Omar are heavily radicalized. Now, that doesn't mean they're terrorists, because radicalization is about ideas. Terrorism is about actions. And a lot of people can be radicalized, but they're not terrorists because they're not going to go out and commit acts of violence. So, but they're heavily radicalized. I mean, she hates this country. She hates what we stand for. She hates our way of life. She hates everything we do overseas. She hates our foreign policy. She hates our military policy. She hates all that. And yet she's managed to worm her way into the government. And this is a very bad thing. And she needs to be gerrymandered and voted out. I mean, her district needs to be broken up so that we don't have a radicalized member of Congress. Same thing with Omar. Omar is another representative of a fringe group with fringe beliefs, very heavily radicalized. And she doesn't care about the well-being of this country. She doesn't care about any of that. She cares about using her position as a way to gain favor, privilege, and everything else towards the group of people she represents. And she is not interested in the greater ideals of what we have. She's just not interested in that. And she is another one. It needs to be, her district needs to be broken up, and she needs to be sent on her way. And, you know, I'm sure that CNN or MSNBC can find some sort of BS consulting job for her, because she cannot remain in the government. That's all there is to it. Got to be voted out. You know, but we do have people in the House of Representatives who are completely worthless or complete kooks. And a name that comes to mind is, you know, Representative Hank Jordan of Georgia. I think that's the congressional aides and everything basically acknowledge that he's the most clueless member of the House of Representatives. He's absolutely moronic in what he says. He's a moron, a plain and simple moron. If you Google Representative Hank Jordan, Guam, U.S. Navy hearing, or any kind of combination like that, probably just Hank Jordan and Guam, you'll see a C-SPAN clip where he's basically talking to an admiral who's testifying. It's probably the head of the, you know, Pacific Command or something. And his concern is that Guam is so small that if we put more military people on it, the island would capsize and tip over. I mean, if an eighth grader said that to me, I would be shocked that they would have such a lack of understanding of what an island is and how things like that work. But to think that a member of Congress could waste a four-star admiral's time, you know, talking about this, and that anybody else would be in there saying this guy's got to be on drugs or just brain addled. He can't be normal and think like that. You can't be normal and think that islands tip over. They don't tip over. And it's not like this guy got it mixed up with a ship or something. He gave the dimensions of the island, that it was 24 miles long and 7 or 8 miles wide, or 14 miles wide at its widest point, and on and on and on. So this guy knows what an island is, but he also thinks it can capsize. It's like the funny thing on Facebook a couple of weeks ago. It goes, the Flat Earth Society has members from around the globe. And all you got to do is say, Hank Jordan could have written that. Hank Jordan could have written that. And maybe he is a flat earther. And maybe he does believe that weird things can happen out in the ocean. The only time I've ever heard of an island actually moving or doing anything was in the kind of the science fiction series Lost. You know, where they were on an island and the island could disappear or move. But, you know, that is fantasy, and Guam is reality. And in reality, islands can't and don't move. But our stupid representatives obviously think so. You think this guy could cast a vote on gun rights or any other subject that took more than a toddler's understanding of? I don't think so. I don't think he's intelligent enough to be in government. He's another one. Has got to go. Has got to be gone. Same thing with, you know, Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren. First of all, Kamala Harris has got to be one of, next to Hank Jordan, she's got to be one of the dumbest people in the country. With her prosecutorial record, where she was throwing people in jail for this, that, she was allegedly a tough prosecutor in San Francisco. I don't know if that means anything outside of the context of San Francisco. But, you know, that's what they called her on at the last debate. I think Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii called her on it. Basically said, you threw people in jail for marijuana, then you laugh about smoking it yourself. Well, Kamala Harris probably, if she'd just change a couple of her positions, she should actually be a Republican, because they're never going to accept her as a Democrat, not when she was throwing people in jail for one of their sacred things, which is marijuana. Because we all know that these people want marijuana. They like marijuana, they want marijuana. So, you know, they're not gonna be well disposed towards a prosecutor who is throwing people in jail for marijuana. And then laughing about how she enjoyed it herself, I guess, in the privacy of her own home. But that was one lie. The other lie that she and both Elizabeth Warren were talking about was the, I guess it's the 5-year anniversary of the shooting in Ferguson. And I mean, this is ridiculous. Everybody investigated it. Everybody knew it was a legal shooting. They all knew that the police officer had no choice. He was being assaulted. His gun was in danger of being taken away from him. They all knew that the hands up, don't shoot was a lie. They all knew that he pulled a strong-armed assault robbery just a short time earlier before the confrontation with the police officer. You know, this was an open and shut case. Even the most liberal attorney general in the history of the country had this investigated and couldn't come up with anything wrong. Basically came to the same conclusion. It was righteous. It was a good piece of police work. I mean, the officer did exactly what he was supposed to do, which was defend himself while he's being assaulted. And that this guy, Brown, had all kinds of bad behavior, illegal behavior prior to this altercation with the police officer, and in fact had a long series of acts that we would call, you know, petty criminal type acts. This guy was not a saint, and you know, it what happened, but they're propagating this lie that there was hands up, don't shoot, that it was some sort of a murder, that it was one of these situations where the police are hunting black people. You know, that's all a fantasy. Even the school, the high school I graduated from, it was a Catholic school. When this all happened, they put out a statement about the police gunning down young men of color and everything. So much to the point that I cut off my contact and everything else with this school, if they're going to believe that. And I wrote some nasty letters, got a nasty response, but you know, they're a bunch of jerks, so who cares? They were propagating the lie then, and Warren and Harris are propagating the lie now. And again, this comes down to, this is going to affect your gun rights, even obliquely. It puts firearms in a bad light, and it's part of the drumbeat that the anti-gun foes are using to try to mute or take away your gun rights. Hey, the next thing coming up is, I don't know if you were watching, but there was this Antifa violence that happened in Portland. There, of course, are these kooky ultra-right protesters, you know, and they're usually pretty small in number. And, you know, nobody really takes these guys seriously. They're so far out there. But they're being used now as kind of the face of just normal people. You know, the media is portraying that, well, these alt-right protesters, they're in all these huge numbers, and that a lot of people, namely white people, support them, which is completely not true, completely untrue. And in fact, you will probably go through your life and never see one of these people. You know, they're that rare, and they're so kooky. They're off on their own world. But unfortunately, Antifa is yet another matter. I live near a large city, and they've got an Antifa chapter. You know, so, hey, it can kind of come close to home. I mean, and these people are real whacks. They are throwbacks to those 1960s violent left-wing groups that we're all kind of used to, that, you know, Symbionese Liberation Army and, you know, some of the Weather Underground and some of these other things. Antifa believes in street violence, and they believe in coming after you with sticks, clubs, Molotov cocktails, all kinds of things. They're really not too much with weapons, but that'll come. And these people are bad, and the only advice I can give you is, first of all, I never go to anything that looks like a political rally type thing like this. It's just too risky. These people can show up and they can create all kinds of freaking problems. And, you know, they want an incident. They want something to happen. And, you know, they're very dangerous. They're young. They're very dangerous. And they'll, you know, they might beat you to death even by accident. But don't go anywhere near. I don't go anywhere near where I think something like this is going to happen. I avoid it. Stay away. You know, and if they come down the street, you know, in the little town I live in, I don't think we'd ever see anybody Antifa, and I don't think they'd get very far. I think our police department would basically be able to handle them. But if, you know, if they came after us for some odd reason, you know, you're going to have no choice but defend yourself, and you're going to have something that's going to give you an edge. And I will leave that to you what that is, but that's what you'll need. And, you know, you think about that and you say, well, that's kind of that weird, almost prepper type fantasy. Well, shoot, who ever heard of Ferguson, Missouri before the Brown shooting? I mean, who ever heard of some of these places? There could be a big incident in your town, a racially charged shooting or some other kind of incident that all of a sudden will put you on the map, and you know, you'll have 24-hour cable news crews climbing all over the place, and somebody decide they're going to show up for a, you know, a protest and then a counter protest and all the rest of it. So I would be very wary that it can happen anywhere, and you should be prepared. Oh, getting on to some better stuff. The FAL files, probably the worst discussion board, gun forum, whatever you want to call it, on the internet. You know, I as a person who's new to it, and I've been shooting FALs for a while, but you know, it's amazing when you start to get into the detail of the FAL and some of the things. You turn to these forums hoping to kind of get some objectivity and to get some good information. But holy Toledo, the amount of ridiculousness, it's just too far. First of all, they just assault. There's only one company in the world that I know of that still makes FALs, and that's DSA, and they're up in Illinois. I think Barrington, Illinois is where they are. And they're the only game in town, and they produce FNFALs. And they do really a very, very good job. They have very, very good products. And, you know, the amount of complaining and bashing that goes on in the FAL files is just outrageous. And the focus of this lately has been the Israeli light barrel FAL, which I think is one of the finest shoulder arms you can purchase. I mean, they're wonderful. They're Israeli parts and FN-made parts that have been put on a DSA-barreled receiver, and they're outstanding. They're just outstanding. But boy, the complaining about people, well, my wood was scuffed up, and I don't know what they think they were buying. I just want to because I don't want to create a firestorm and because I really don't want to interact with these people. But you just want to ask them, what the hell did you think you were buying? The description is very plain. These are 60, almost 60-year-old parts kits. And of course the wood is going to have some use on it. Of course some of the parts are going to have wear. And you have two options. You can get the rifle that's been refinished, the metal anyway, and you know it's got the wood on it. The wood's got a few dings on it or scuffs. Or you can get one that's been where the barrel and the receiver have been antiqued to match the unrestored parts. I mean, you got two ways to go. And I don't understand why it's so difficult to understand that. They're very upfront. When you read it on their website, it's very upfront what you're going to get. And it's also very upfront that they're kind of making these. And so these guys who say, well, I ordered mine in March and it's not here yet. Well, you should have ordered in December when they were first announced and you would have had it in a month. I mean, or a month or two. I mean, that's really the only option. And to carp on it on this forum is just ridiculous. So, you know, sort of like a lot of other things that's got gun content, it's either worth your time or it's not. Right now, it's just not worth the time. Next interesting item is I noticed that there's an attempt underway to exhume John Dillinger's grave and make sure it was actually him. And, you know, that's another fool's errand. I wasn't involved with it, but I'm involved with an organization on the periphery of it. They did the same thing with Jesse James about, well, it's 25 years ago now. And, you know, exhuming the graves and then doing a DNA test, and everybody thinks that's going to close the case. Well, it's not. All it's going to say is, well, the test was contaminated, or it's, you know, the conspiracy theorists will just weave another web of conspiracy into it to validate what they're saying and to mitigate the scientific tests or anything that comes out of the exhumation. So I don't know why they're planning on doing this. I think that, you know, the public, after all these years, is still fascinated. And it's 85 years ago. Dillinger was gunned down by the FBI outside of the Biograph Theater in Chicago. And you think that's a long time ago, but it's well within the living memories of still a few of the older people. And people like, they're gone now, but my parents remembered, you know, that happening, and that was big news. And, you know, it was a huge deal when this happened. And there's also been the movies and all the other things that have glamorized and glorified, if you will, Dillinger and the gangsters. So, you know, there's a lot of interest. And one of the coolest things, I think it was on Machine Gun Boards, one of the guys went and visited Dillinger's grave. And how he did this without creating a real problem, I don't know. But he visited Dillinger's grave and posed there with his semi-automatic Tommy gun. And then he put the Tommy gun on the gravestone and took a picture. I'm sure they take an extremely dim view of that. But he got away with it and did it. So I got to give him kudos for that. But it's the, you know, and that's also the thing that keeps the semi-automatic Thompsons kind of out there. The price on them has been kind of climbing up, you know, but that's because they've kept quality the same. Quality on those guns is excellent. They're very well made. You get a very, very nice, nostalgic firearm for the price, and they're a lot of fun to shoot. You know, most of us don't have the means to even think about a fully automatic Thompson. I mean, that's the price of a luxury car, so the price of a very nice car anyway, and so therefore we don't have that as an option. And so the semi-automatic ones can at least give you something, and they're priced. When you compare them to the fully automatic ones, they're quite a bargain, quite a bargain. And if they ever take SBRs off the NFA, then they'll be even more cool. You won't be a fool like me. I paid to have mine to get the license to install the shorter barrel. But I'm really hoping that that those things eventually come off, SBRs come off the NFA, and then everybody can have a pretty authentic looking Thompson. And that would really be nice. Okay, let's go to my favorite part of the podcast, which is questions and answers. Okay, the first question I have is, what is the best value in Super Magnum revolvers? And a Super Magnum is anything above 44 Magnum. 44 Magnum, there's a lot of choices out there, single action, double action, and even the Desert Eagle as a semi-automatic pistol option. So there's plenty of 44 Magnums out there. Super Magnums are above that, and that's when you start talking about 454 Casull, 480 Ruger, 460 Smith & Wesson, 500 Smith & Wesson. There's a lot of stuff out there, but I think the best value has to be probably the Ruger Super Red Hawk in 454. It's powerful, it's durable, it's built like a tank. And I think I've seen those on GunBroker for under 700, you know, 650 to 700, which is really a good price. I mean, now you can go with the Magnum Research BFR revolvers, which are single action, and I think they cost just a little bit more. But you can get that. But that Ruger is a fine gun, and it's big. It will soak up some of that recoil. I myself have no use for them at this point. Anything that, to me, 44 Magnum is far and away enough. And anything that I need to shoot with a 454 that would be successful that I can't shoot with a 44 Magnum because it would be unsuccessful, well, I'm going to be armed differently and hopefully maybe even in a different location where none of that matters. But yeah, that's I think the best option in that great big revolver like that. Ruger makes great durable guns. I mean, maybe it's not as quite as refined or definitely not as sleek as other revolvers, but it'll get the job done, and it's the durability and reliability are excellent. Okay, what is the best value in AR rifles? Very interesting question. And I have to say this, if you're some sort of high speed operator and you're using it for some sort of clandestine operation, you know, security operation somewhere, whatever, then take whatever they issue you or buy the very best, because that's what you want. For normal people who do sport shooting and might possibly use it for defense, I think you can't go wrong with either the Ruger or the Smith & Wesson M&P 15. Both of those are excellent rifles. They come, and the beautiful part is they come from good established manufacturers. So if there's a problem, you just send it back. And if it's an incurable problem, they'll send you a new one. I do think, you know, for shooting level ARs, those are great options, and you can hunt around and get good prices on them. But I will say I also never had any problem with DPMS products. I think DPMS makes a great gun. My A2 is a DPMS, and it's outstanding. I really like it. If you're going to go retro, of course, there's only one choice. That's Brownells. And coincidentally, they are on sale at this moment in time, a couple hundred dollars off, which is big savings. You can get into most of their models under $1,000, so that's pretty nice. And those guns, they are worth every penny. If you want a retro AR, like I said, buy them now. Brownells has done a first-rate job. I wish I had a whole safe full of them. I mean, I admire them so much for what they've achieved, which is becoming a top-tier gun manufacturer using high-quality components, meticulous assembly, and keeping the price reasonable. I don't know how they do it. I just don't. But they have really brought an outstanding product to the marketplace. Okay, what is the best value in precision rifles? And I was asked this by somebody who's not a PRS competitor or anything. We were discussing long-range rifles, and he was mentioning a 30-06 Remington 700 with a 3-9 scope. And you know, 15, 20 years ago, it's not a bad setup, not a bad setup at all. Nowadays, it has been eclipsed by cartridge, rifle, and optic improvements, which have come through the evolution of long-range shooting as a separate and distinct sport, and not just an adjunct of high power. And the specialized equipment used in it has really come an incredible amount, an incredible way, since we were shooting with 3-9 variables at 1,000 yards. And that was back in the 90s, not all that long ago. But now it's quite possible to get an excellent rifle that'll shoot out to 1,000 yards very accurately for really an astoundingly low price. And I think, you know, the winner in all that is Savage. Savage's, their price point is exactly right for a budget-minded shooter like me, because everything I do has got to be on a budget, and it's got to fit in the budget, or it doesn't happen. There's no frivolous extra money. So when you get a Savage 12 FV, you're getting a great barrel action trigger combination there. And the stock I did not find useful. So I got a very modestly priced Bell & Carlson Medalist stock to put on it. Basically, the barrel was still free-floated, so it worked outstandingly. You can get bottom metal and rig it up for magazine feed. I chose not to do that. I'm not a PRS competitor, so I don't really care about that. And I like the rigidity of having the blind magazine in there with the in the Medalist stock. One area that you do have to get a mount and rings, and you know you can go cheap. You'll be sorry, but you can go cheap, or you can spend some good money on that, and then you can get a good, there's some really good optics out there that won't really break the bank. Everybody likes to talk about the top-end stuff because that's all fun to talk about, but there's some great optics out there, and if you look at Bushnell, you look at Athlon, you look at a lot of them, there's some great optics out there that'll really give you excellent service. And if you're out there, you know, coyote hunting or shooting game at long, you know, varmints at long range, Savage is a hard setup to beat. And the nice part about it is you have a traditionally barreled rifle, and we'll just use Remington 700 as an example. Well, changing the barrel on that can be an expensive, time-consuming proposition. Whereas the Savage, you could actually even do it yourself. Or you can pay, you know, a reasonably talented gunsmith, riflesmith, to do it for you. They can do it probably very quickly, because they're designed to have replaceable barrels. So that's a very, very nice feature when you're shooting cartridges that are known to be hard on barrels. And a lot of these newer cartridges, even 6.5 Creedmoor, is known to wear out barrels faster than the cartridges that they displaced. And so Savage is, I think, still has the price point. I think that for about $1,000, maybe even under $1,000, you can get a single-shot bolt-action 338 Lapua from Savage. Now, again, this isn't the fanciest one out there. It doesn't look like it just came off the set of Star Wars with the high-speed chassis and everything. But I bet that it's going to shoot really, really well. And dollar for dollar, it's going to be fantastic. You know, and especially when you're talking 338 Lapua, that is not a cheap undertaking. The ammo is expensive, because you don't shoot cheap ammo in it. You shoot precision ammo. And I'm not saying it's overpriced or it's overrated. I'm just saying that you pay for that quality. That quality you pay for, and you get the expected performance. The Savage, I think for, you know, let me just guess and say, that if you bought that Savage for $1,000, let's say by $900, I think it was closer to $900, I think for $2,000 total, you could put a good, not the fanciest, but a good bipod, a nice but not the top end scope, and really good rings, a really good mountain rings, which you would need. I would go Badger Ordnance. Those guys know how to build. They know how to build a mountain rings. That's what I used on mine, and you just never even look back. It's expensive, but it's well worth it. And even on a budget build, I think the reason that my build was so successful was because I used those quality components. Bell & Carlson is a great stock. It's essentially a chassis that's got fiberglass over it to make it look more like a conventional stock. And it's got a high comb so that I was able to use it with my Athlon scope without any kind of a riser or anything. And the medium high mounts that Badger Ordnance sold made it exactly with that 56 millimeter objective lens that's on my Athlon scope. So, I mean, it's a beautiful package. And, you know, you toss on some Butler Creek scope covers. And it wasn't even a Harris bipod. I couldn't find one when I was looking for one a few months ago. But it was a Harris copy that, it pans and it does all that kind of stuff. And it was about a $65 bipod as opposed to about $120, which is what the Harris with the little adapter would cost. So, you know, I was very, very pleased with it. I mean, you know, is this something that is going to last me forever? Well, I think it's going to last as well as anything. Would it make me competitive with the top shooters? Probably not. A lot of people don't like the AccuTrigger. I find it to be very, very comfortable and very good because I'm used to shooting a lot of military rifles, and it feels excellent compared to some of the heavier trigger pulls that I'm used to. For people who are used to shooting very, very bench rest type rifles or precision type rifles, it might feel very crude to them, and they would say, no, this thing's got to be replaced. Wouldn't be a big deal since there are a lot of aftermarket Savage triggers, but I'm very happy with it. It's done me well. 6.5 Creedmoor is a fun, outstanding cartridge, and I really like it. And I'm very happy with it. And I got into the whole thing for under $1,000, which, you know, that was gun budget for a long time. It took a long time saving, and I had to buy this and then wait a few months and then buy that. You know, that's part of the fun of the build is doing the research, but getting the best value for your money. Can it outshoot a rifle that costs twice as much? I don't know, and I don't really care. I know it shoots well for me, and it shoots probably well beyond my capability to hit. And that's all I'm looking for. One of these days, I'll have it out and shoot some coyotes with it. We'll see. But it's a really fun target rifle to have right now. So I basically did the same thing with my kind of aborted NRL-22 career. I used a Savage Mark II, and I tell you, heavy barrel, it shoots exceptionally well. I put a Boyd's AT1 stock on it, a primary arm scope, and a aftermarket bipod, and that baby works well. And a GI, what do they call it, an M1 sling, you know, canvas GI sling that I could use when I needed to sling up somehow. I could do the hasty sling, or I could even do a deliberate sling if I needed to. Found that really doesn't apply in NRL-22, but it's a good sling for, you know, if you need to do just a hasty sling, which you can do in that sport. So, you know, Savage, what they lack in some physical beauty, they make up for more in performance. And beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So I'm very convinced that the best bolt action rifles around for the buck our Savage rifles. Okay, our next question is one that's obviously come up since the news items of the last couple of weeks. How should shooting enthusiasts respond to mass shootings? Okay, I'm going to take two parts of this. One is, how do you respond to these as a shooting enthusiast? What happens across the country? People know you're into shooting. How should you respond or comport yourself after this kind of event occurs? And I would say that, and this is going to sound kind of contrite, but, you know, we owe it to the sport to be good ambassadors of the sport. So the best thing to do is don't get emotional, don't respond to emotion, and try to just distance and say, this is not representative of the gun community. This is not what the Second Amendment supporters are advocating. We're not advocating that everybody has a military weapon, and when you have a grudge, you can go out and use that to get even with people. No, basically explain this in the context that it is, that we have a mental health problem in the country that we never had before. And in fact, we used to have guns in schools for rifle teams and all kinds of other activities. People used to bring their guns to school, lock them in their pickup or their car, and then go hunting after school. So guns in schools, this is not a new phenomenon. It's just how they're being used. And we have some real societal problems that we need to control. Plus, we also need to have things like good security in different places. And there's the whole list of things to talk about that are ways of telling people the situation can be improved without taking everyone's guns away, which is where liberals immediately want to go and which gun controllers immediately want to go. Don't get emotional. If somebody is really talking about it emotionally, what I do is I just stay quiet, and I might not engage them for a day or two. I might not put up with, you know, I might not take the bait, because a lot of times they want to bait you into a conversation where you're defending guns, which in their mind just did a bad thing, even though we know guns on their own can't do anything good or bad, because they're a collection of molecules and an object that has no thoughts or conscience of its own. It's just an object. So anyway, you sometimes have to resist that. The other thing is be a good ambassador. Don't get macho about guns, whether something like this has happened or not. Don't say, I'd like to shoot this guy in the face or some of this other kind of stuff. Hey, if you got guns, come across as the responsible, measured, you know, intelligent person, and not just a knee jerk who says, I hate that guy and I'm going to shoot him. No, that's not what you say. That's not how you comport yourself. Be professional, be a good ambassador, and realize that people are going to get upset over something when that happens, and they're going to blame all kinds of things, but they're going to blame guns first, and they may blame guns the longest. So you kind of have to ride some of that out. That's what I would say. The other thing is, when people come up with obviously false statistics or false facts, you can refute that fact, do it in a respectful and in a, you know, a calm manner. Just say, no, that's not true that 90% of the American public wants gun control. Just say, that's not true. Where are you getting that statistic? Because here are other statistics. And you have to arm yourself with some statistics. How many millions of Americans own guns, how large the country is, and how aberrant these shootings really are. That basically, you know, go back to a few podcasts ago, we talked about the numbers that Neil deGrasse Tyson was throwing out. And I don't know if his numbers were entirely accurate, but the fact of the matter is there's a lot more dangerous things in this world than firearms. And he listed them out. And the things that take life are firearms are way down the list on that. So, you know, you can refute some of that also. The other aspect of this question, which is in some ways a lot simpler to answer, is you're in a public place and you hear gunshots and a mass shooting has started. And that could be in a public place, it could be in a workspace, wherever you are. And you are armed. What should you do? I would say that the first duty you have is to make sure that your family and people around you can get to safety. So I would move people to safety. What you cannot do and should not do is draw your firearm and run to the sound of the guns. Even though it would make a great news story that you, the armed citizen, popped the bad guy and took him out, that's really not very helpful, because you go in there with a gun drawn, nobody knows who you are, and they could assume that you are an accomplice or somebody else, and any law enforcement that's responding could definitely shoot first and ask questions later, especially if you have a weapon drawn. They're going to be, you know, the adrenaline is really going to be moving. So the last thing you want to do is be a friendly who gets hit by a friendly. So do not ride towards the sound of the guns. Now, if it starts happening right in front of you and you're armed and you think, hey, I'm going to be next, or my member of my family is going to be next, then by all means, do as best as you can. And the good part of that is, usually when these shooters are confronted with any kind of resistance, much less armed resistance, they usually stop. And they usually either turn the gun on themselves, they surrender, or they try to leave the area. Something happens when another armed person confronts them, and all of a sudden they're not holding the cards anymore. They're not exclusively the one with a weapon. So I would say that would be the best advice I could give you, is unless you're in imminent danger, don't think you're going to be the cavalry riding to the rescue. If you are in immediate danger, then go ahead and do the best you can. And remember, you're there to save and not necessarily be the action hero to end the whole situation. There, the professionals will handle that. But it's a very difficult thing. You can't really give good advice, because you can't really know every situation. It's very easy to say, hey, maybe you're at a public place and it happens in front of you. But, you know, you may not be really even in the correct mindset. Most of us go to public places, you know, just to get things done. I mean, who hasn't been in a Walmart and the last thing you're thinking about is, hey, some trouble's going to break out. You're thinking about, hey, where's the dish soap? You know, where'd they put the cat food again? You know, where's this other thing on the list I can't find? You know, that's kind of what's on your mind. That's what's going there. What are we going to eat for dinner Tuesday night? And on and on and on. It's you probably aren't prepared for when that's going to happen, because we aren't even prepared when we hear about it and you hear about these things going on. So anyway, the best way to respond is, if it's in a situation where you hear about a mass shooting, is be a good ambassador for the sport. And if you do decide to get into an argument or a discussion about it, make sure you've armed yourself with facts and that you can respond calmly. And heaven forbid, if you're in a shooting situation, make sure that you're there to save people and not make a target out of yourself, or not endanger anyone further by taking some rash action. Anyway, this is Old School Guns. We have come to an end of another podcast, and if you like what you hear, hit the subscription button, the like button, the follower button. We appreciate all that, and we'll see where any of that all goes. But I think we got a few people following. We're getting a lot of downloads from around the United States, which is fun. And if you've got any comments, be sure to put them in the comment block for the episode, and I'll get to them. We've had only a few comments, but they've been very, very good. So thank you to the commenters, and this is Old School Guns out.